Welcome to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
My name is Jill.
And my name is Michael.
Catch us every other Wednesday talking about books, publishing, indie bookstores, chatting with authors, and so much more.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod for more Book It content.
Want to read something you heard about on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod. You are just looking so like creative and like Mr. Artsy today in your black sweater with the mock neck and
See, I was a little bit worried I was looking too much like Elizabeth Holmes and then I'm about to be on trial.
No.
So I appreciate it. Thank you.
That is definitely not the vibe I was getting.
Okay, good, 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 good. Yeah, my eyes aren't like bulging out of my head. I'm not a platinum blonde today.
Today. Well, yeah. And you use conditioner. Why is her hair always frizzy?
I don't know. And like where I truly like, nothing about a person's image, whatever, like I don't care how someone looks, but she's also an evil person. So yes, her hair could use some conditioner.
Yes. And I guess the reason I comment on it is that I feel like and everyone's priorities are different. And maybe sure. says way more about me than it does about her. Yeah. But if I was either a Disney villain in real life or a gazillionaire, I feel like having good hair would be a high priority.
Top priority.
For me.
Sure. Yeah. Because I hope I'm not a Disney villain in real life and I am not a gazillionaire. And I really desperately need my hair to be not super dry. I mean, like my hair life has changed a lot in the last couple of years. Like, what are we talking about right now?
I have no idea.
But anyway, thank you for the compliment. I will take it.
I have a feeling about why it is, and it's going to be a really terrible segue. So,
okay, great.
But like, we are existing in this reality where we have now a 10-minute version of All Too Well, plus a 14-minute short film, plus an update and a video on I Bet You Think About Me, and like what. It's so appropriate because like we binged on it all weekend and we have walked into this week completely hungover on Taylor Swift and 2010s nostalgia. And it's so perfectly aligned for today's episode, Book Hangovers.
It's funny you say this because I'm going to say something that is controversial.
I love a hot take.
And I don't mean anything by this, and like we can just go right, we can skate right past it. But I hope not. Well, I am not, nor have I ever been really a Swiftie, and I don't mean anything by that other than the fact that, she annoys the hell out of me. But
I love that.
I'm happy for everybody.
Yeah.
I'm glad she's getting the ownership of her music back. My only like real true problem with all of it is that like she exists in this untouchable realm where she is allowed to like write songs about people she knows both romantically and like just friendship wise in a way that is like telling her truth and being really open and honest. Okay, power to you. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
My issue is that when someone else tries to do it or when someone has another perspective on like their relationship with her.
Yeah.
People are like, how dare you? She's Taylor Swift. Like, this is a positive place. It's like, what? Like, she set that standard. Like, sorry about it. So that grinds my gears.
Sure.
And that has almost nothing to do with her music because otherwise I'm like, the girl, she writes bops and I can't deny that.
Yeah. No, I am also would not describe myself as a Swiftie. She has grown on me over time, and that could be the girls' influence on me. Because they love her.
Yeah.
There are aspects of things she has done and said that I think are really, really interesting and in some ways like deeply feminist and trailblazing. Sure. And in other ways, I'm like, ooh, ooh, oh.
Yeah. And like also like probably same.
Right. I will also say that for the bulk of the time we've known her, she's been between like 19 and 25.
Right.
So.
That too, where I'm just like, okay, you have been like famous and rich and wealthy since you were 16. Like, I was pimpling in the closet when I was 16. Like, I can't relate.
Oh, no.
But anyway, sorry, come at me. Like, I don't care. I was just...
No, I think it's okay.
Okay, good. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, I mean, because it's super important, I know. You have my permission to...
No, that's very important to me.
Oh, but I just felt like this was, like, so appropriate because, yes. You know, like... Our mutual friend Andrea and I were having a discussion about how not only do your feelings change or how you see mm-hmm. things change as you're at different points in your life, but apparently your take on other people's relationships also evolve.
Yes.
I don't know. It's just been a weekend of really interesting reflection. Discussions with friends and like mid-2000s nostalgia.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm curious. So like when I think of a book hangover, it's usually because I'm like mentally parked in the reality of the book that I just finished. And like no other book can delight me because what I really want is like more time in the world of the last book or more of the last book or the characters, or because I'm kind of still chewing on it.
Totally.
But I can't possibly think of a new book because I'm just so
absolutely
not over the last one. What does a book hangover look like for you?
Oh, I love the way you put that. I think for me, book hangovers can reflect all the different kinds of real hangovers that I'm capable of having, which is like the one that hits me right away, the one that I don't feel until the next morning, and one that is so intense that I will never do it again.
I love this already. Say more.
Well, and like all of these in the book world are positive. Like when I think of kind of what you're saying, when I think of book hangovers, it's always when I can't stop thinking about a book and whatever's coming next, like, sorry about it. I shouldn't read you right now because I can't stop thinking about this other book.
Yeah.
There's a book that I have later where it's like the whole time I was reading it, I knew that I was not going to be able to stop thinking about this book for a while. And then there's another one that I was reading it and it wasn't until the very end where it hit me and I was like, oh, that made my stomach hurt and was an incredible ending and I can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
And then another one where it was so intense and good, but so intense that I'm very hesitant to ever read it again. Like my relationship with vodka. So, you know, one's a glass of wine, one's a can of beer, and one's my relationship with vodka. And I love books like this because they tend to be the ones that, in reflection, really help me identify what kind of reader I am, because they're like ultimately the ones that clearly have had the most impact on me. And they're also really complicated in my brain. They're not ones that I immediately necessarily recommend to everybody because they had such an impact on me. So I don't want that to be deflected in any way. And also because they're unique. Like,
yeah,
they stand out from the other kinds of books that I've read.
You're right. I hadn't really thought about it from the perspective of they stand in the volume of what you read. Mm-hmm. And for us, that's high. Like these especially stand out.
It's weird, right? Like,
and it really is.
Because when you brought up the idea of this episode, I immediately thought I knew which books I was going to talk about. Yeah. And then the more I sat with it, I was like, no. Like, actually, these books, like... And I've also noticed that when I think of the books that I'm going to talk about later, like a very specific aspect of the book comes to mind, not the book as a whole, but like the thing that made it like, oh my God, comes to mind. And that to me was the biggest difference.
I am so glad that you say this because I had the hardest time picking my books for this episode. It was actually, I was like 5-10 minutes late today because I was still trying to pick one more book.
Oh my God, me too. Like I have one that I'm not sure. Like,
right. I'm not totally. Normally I write like 3 pages of notes on the books that I'm going to talk about. And I have a paragraph. So we're going to see how this goes.
And true to form, haven't written anything.
I had a very hard time deciding, and I very much did not want to pick a book. One of the books I didn't pick because I thought you might pick it. And 2 of the books I didn't pick because if I talk about them on this podcast one more time, everyone's going to vomit. And another book, because we both read it so recently and we discussed it so thoroughly, I thought everyone would be bored hearing about it anymore. And I was just, I don't know. I was really torn. I was like Googling lists of like what other people considered their like hangover books and ended up making a short list of books I want to read. Like, what is wrong with me?
Oh, I love it.
Right? I mean, it's terrible. How often do you get a book hangover?
Jill, I love that you say that because I also was like, if I talk about this book one more fucking time, like we are, that's it. Like we have no more listeners. Like I've talked about this book too many times. Enough. Well, at first I was like, just think harder. Like what other books did you love haven't talked about? And then it came actually really quickly because I was like, oh my gosh, I've never talked about the book. But in the same way, like I don't talk about the hangovers I've had in life. Like they didn't feel very good, but they were followed by what was probably a really fun night.
It's such an interesting take because one of the books I did decide to talk about today, I didn't immediately think of it. I have mixed feelings about it, which we can get into. But I think it reflected the most on me personally, which made it kind of like, ooh.
Strange.
We'll get into it when we get there. I don't want to spoil it.
Absolutely.
But
you asked me a question. I didn't answer it. What did you ask me?
How often do you get book hangovers? Oh. Like, do you see that? Well, you said sometimes you see them coming, but I'm curious, like, does it happen a lot?
I want to say no, because like that is what makes them special. And they sit somewhere else in my brain. Sometimes my book hangovers intersect with what are my favorite books. And sometimes not necessarily.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think, like, in 2021, I had such a good reading year.
Yeah.
But I didn't have a lot of book hangovers, even though I loved a lot of the books that I read. And so I think it's really, outside of like one example that I will share, I usually can't tell when it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And that way it's hard to track like how often it's happening. I'll say 2021, I had it maybe once in a really profound way. 2020, this one of the other books I'm picking up was a book hangover. And then the other one is like from like 7 or 8 years ago, the first time I read it.
Same.
And I also think like time will tell with these too. Like that's the difference between knowing when something is one of my favorite books ever and when it's a book hangover is when it comes back to me in a specific way years later. What about you?
Yes, one of my picks definitely has that feel for it.
Or have you noticed a trend at all? Like in like genre, in type of book? Because I kind of want to say yes for me, but I don't know, like at least in the ones that I'm picking and talking about today, but in general, I don't know if I sense a trend.
I definitely saw a trend in my picks and it ties in nicely with, I'm sort of obsessed with this. Like during my prep for our Characters We Can't Quit episode, I stumbled into this like really great research being done out of the University of Toronto where they use brain imaging and interviews and like talk therapy to like dig into the impacts of reading on social emotional skills. And I read this really great article with one of the researchers and she talked about the sadness that we feel at the end of a book and how it's really this lovely thing. It's our brain signaling the loss of something we value. And it might be the loss of a character that we connected with really strongly or an imaginary world that's presented to us in the book. And on the MRIs, our brains light up in the same region when we talk about the emotional impact of character death as when we talk about like real life people we've known who died. And they have found that people who self-identify as heavy readers or people who read regularly not only show more brain activity in general in these areas when they talk about books that impacted them really deeply, but they fire neurons over like a larger area of the brain in general than like self-identified people who read less or not at all. And I can't remember if we talked about this aspect on the previous episode or not, but like these studies are like at the forefront now of why we should value social emotional learning in kids and in school and the development of empathy and the skills that are needed to navigate disagreements and compromise are tied to the same area of the brain. Like I'm so obsessed with it.
Wow. I am kind of blown away and not totally surprised, but it's just really validating. And I think that empathy is huge. Like, and I think that has a lot to do with it. And I think that like, I think you're right, or you did the study. I think.
Yes, I'm personally responsible for this research. Thank you.
I'm not surprised to hear that people who consider themselves heavy readers are maybe more emotionally equipped to handle certain things, because fiction specifically, there's a book that we read in school called The Lie That Tells the Truth, and it's about how fiction is just a window into the truth. And it's so, that is so true. Like we learn empathy through reading stories about people who aren't like us. And if you consider yourself a heavy reader, I think that makes total sense that the data would reflect that. I love that you brought that up. I don't think we've talked about that.
It's really fascinating to me. And they control for a number of things. I mean, without getting too far into this, they control for a number of factors that I think are really important, because she says, you know, you have to keep in mind that from this conversation, we're controlling for things like food insecurity and access to enrichment activities. And when they pair socioeconomic groups, so you're comparing kids with food insecurity only to kids with food insecurity. And and across the board, like this really holds true. And I just find that I like just want to talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
Because I think it's fascinating, but also because I just feel like the lack of empathy and the ability to understand other people's perspectives is just at so much at the heart of what the world looks like right now.
Well, but you know what it can also do? It can also help empower people, young people especially, to vocalize what they need and set certain boundaries and just have the right vocabulary to discuss like their circumstances in life.
Yeah.
And I think that, I don't think that's necessarily just fiction. You and I happen to read a lot of fiction, but I have a friend who's in a boundaries book club. And they're reading a book about how to set boundaries in your life.
Yeah.
And I just like, sign me fucking up. Like
Tell me about it. Boundaries book, like each month you're reading or whatever time period is, you're reading about different kinds of boundaries?
No, I think it's, oh, shit. It's my friend Margie. I think she listens. Margie, if I'm incorrect, text me right now. But I think it's just one book that they were reading that they were splitting up into the sections of the book. And they've just been meeting to discuss it and how to implement those boundaries on their own lives. And like a book led them to that. Like I think books can be empowering.
I need a boundaries book.
Yeah.
Well, that's really interesting because, so like one of the other things that they said that was in this article was about how sometimes it's just that like the central issue that's raised in the book is like really active in your mind for whatever reason. And so you kind of get that hungover feeling because you're still unraveling whatever it is about it that's, for lack of a better word, like plaguing you. Like,
yes.
You know, maybe we're all. There's
good and bad to that. Like, I think about, there are certain books that I stopped reading because of the way it was making me feel.
Yes.
And those books that I DNF'd, There's one book in particular that I actually can't stop thinking about to this day, and I didn't even finish it. I would argue possibly a negative way. The other side of it, though, is what you're saying, where it's like, I do feel, that's a great word for it, I do feel plagued by aspects of these books that I just can't quit, that bring me back to them.
This just, you said it was a book you DNF'd that you still think about. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, boo, I sent you a book last year and I was like, I can't finish this.
Yes.
I still think about that.
Oh my gosh.
Book.
Yeah, that's significant.
The aspects of it that troubled me deeply. And what? I read like 75 pages of that book. And then I was like, get this book away from me. And I don't even remember the title of it. And you had expressed interest in it. I was like, I'm just sending this to you because I'm not going to try again.
What was
that book?
I remember that we didn't say it specifically because like it was a big title for marketers and we didn't want them to hear
we
us dragging
it. We didn't want them
it.
To hate us. Yeah.
And I can't remember. But now I just truly can't remember.
Oh my God. It had a yellow cover.
Yeah, it did have a yellow cover.
Oh, it's going to bug me.
It's downstairs. I'll grab it before the end.
Yeah, you have to. We'll like put it at the end so that we don't leave everybody hanging.
But where, I mean, that's an interesting, it is interesting that it can, you can still have the same like brain impact on something that you didn't see through to the end that I almost more powerfully, like I'm having a more visceral reaction to like that book I didn't finish than any of the ones that I brought. And I think maybe because of the negative side of it.
Oh, I'm so upset that we did. I feel like we have to now do a whole episode on books we DNF'd and like
yes,
unpacking
and
why. Because this has, I'm just like all my gears are firing now. And I'm really wanting to discuss this book that neither of us can even name. Like that's part two of this conversation. Okay, well, let's dig in. I feel like we've had so many spoilers.
Yes.
What's your first pick?
My first book, I read this in 2020, like at the very start of the year, like pre-lockdown.
Was there a time before COVID?
Isn't that, well, I mean, do you, okay, we're, a little bit of a sidebar. I've been telling like stories from like years ago lately. Like I met with my friend Margie and I was telling her about some time that I had to go to the doctor like 7 or 8 years ago. And in my memory brain, I was wearing a mask. Are you doing that? Like, do you sense that?
No, but I don't want you to feel weird.
No, it really, like, blew my mind. I was like, I'm
That's
filling in because of what's happened. Like, my memories are changing.
Oh, gosh.
Anyway.
Fascinating.
The COVID book is the book hangover that I do not want to have. I'm
yeah,
not
going
to be reading it. So, the first book is The Nickel Boys by Colson Whitehead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, by the way, like I said, I'm trying to pick books that I haven't talked about much, if at all, on this podcast before. I have so many more than the three I've brought. But this was one that I don't really remember talking about much. Mm-mm. And it won the Pulitzer. But for some reason, I still feel like people didn't really like talk about it a ton.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a book that you saw everywhere, but didn't hear
everywhere.
Everywhere, which is weird. Yeah.
So a brief synopsis. The Nickel Boys is about a young boy named Elwood who has been abandoned by his parents and he's about to start his high school, senior year of high school. But he lives in Jim Crow South in the early 1960s and is accused of something he didn't do and is sent to the Nickel Academy, which is a juvenile reformatory. And their mission statement says it provides physical, intellectual, and moral training so that delinquent boys in its charge can become honorable and honest men. So the whole book is him in this detention center and knowing that, one, he didn't do anything wrong. Mm-hmm. It's Jim Crow South. And that in and of itself is very troubling and hard to read, of course. And throughout the book, like, boys have tried to escape before, but they're really discouraged to do that between one another because, like, if you get caught, like, your sentence is worse than death sometimes. And it moves really quickly. It goes through the years really quickly. And it's hard for me to talk about the part that is the hangover part because it will absolutely spoil the ending. Because what made it such a hangover was that I was reading it one way the whole time, specifically in these two characters' voices, perspectives. And an attempt to leave happens. And it's told sort of like in the 1960s and also when the main character is an adult. So you get this idea that he's escaped. But something happens. Uh-huh. Should I say it? I really don't want to.
I don't want you to tell me.
Okay, I won't say it.
Okay.
I don't want to either. But it got to a point, and it's so subtle. It's truly like one sentence where my perspective on the entire book, literally the entire book, changed. Like,
yeah.
I can't stop thinking about the way he pulled it off, because it's not over, but it's so over. Like, you have no question about what Colson White had just did. And then you question, like, how did he do this? And how did he fool me? Like, I just can't believe it.
Yeah.
If you've read The Nickel Boys, you'll know what I'm talking about. And I am curious if people knew the truth. Like, if they knew that this was actually what was happening. Because I was stunned. And immediately was like, this has got to win big prizes. Like, mm-hmm. This was before it won the Pulitzer. And then when it won, I was like, yeah, I'm not surprised. And it was the first time I've ever read something before it's won a big award and been like, this deserves that big award. Like, usually I'm late to the game and I read it after it's won.
Yeah.
But it just did something to my whole body where, like, the minute I think about the Nickel Boys, it's all I can think about. It, like, the way that I felt like I had two reading experiences at the same time after this, like, single sentence very near the end. Like, maybe it was even the last sentence of the book. I can't remember, but... And I've never read anything else by Colson Whitehead. I haven't read The Underground Railroad. We watched the show on Amazon, and it's hard to watch. It's sort of like a alternate history where there is an actual literal Underground Railroad that they...
Oh.
Yeah, and that was such a shock. Like, we were watching it, and I was like, to the point where I was like, is this true? Like, I am pretty sure there wasn't one, but he's so good at that that you just... But he puts you in his reality so well that you don't question it. So then when he comes at you with a surprise, it, like, changes everything. So this kind of thing is different to me than just something that is, like, shock value surprise.
Yeah.
That, like, feels really... Those can feel really, like, empty, and I don't think about them very often. And I have those books. I know what those are. Like, but this... I can't imagine the story being told another way.
Yeah.
And because of that, it's just, like... I was so hung up on it. I, to the point where, like, I would, like, glaze over, and Josh would be like, where did you go? Like, what are you thinking about? And I'd be like, I'm thinking about the Nickel Boys.
Well, you know what it reminds me of? When you and I both were talking about Less.
Yeah. Which is one I did not bring because I talk about it all the time.
Right. Yeah. Same. I also almost talked about it.
Yeah.
So let's talk about it now. But... when it's revealed who the narrator is, and all of a sudden your perspective just flips 180 on the whole thing. And it's like it was always there. So it's not like an empty reveal.
Yes.
But also you didn't see it coming.
Yes.
It's just such a powerful. Masterful. A powerful plot device? I don't
know. Almost, no, I totally agree with you. It's almost like it feels like it was written from that point. It was like... Do you know what I mean? So it never, it feels like ingrained into the story, not like, I need something here. I need a twist or whatever. I totally agree with
you. Don't you just want to ask both authors, like,
yes.
Was it ever written from the other perspective? Did you have to think about, like, I have 10,000 questions now.
Me too. So that's my first one. Hit me with your first one.
I'm going to start easy and then get harder. The first one that I picked was An Absolutely Remarkable Thing by Hank Green.
Oh, wow.
I know, right? It's kind of an off-the-wall pick.
Yes, I'm actually surprised.
Well, here's the thing about it. I will tell you up front, if this sort of thing bothers you, there are several things that happen in the book that are, like, far-fetched. You just have to, like, accept that and, like, move on. And I think my expectations were low, you know, like I thought he was like the funny Green brother.
Yeah, sure.
And so those things I accepted very easily. That aside, there is a loss of friendship in the book that really just broke my heart. And I think we've all had realizations where you're like, this person is not my friend
anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Like one incident kind of shines the light on your whole relationship. And mm-hmm. all of a sudden you see, it just totally changes your perspective, or it enhances mm-hmm. your understanding. And that aspect of the book really struck me. Mm-hmm. And the other piece of it that I thought was really interesting, both in the book and in the sequel, is just like this feeling of being stuck in like the muck and the mire of not knowing maybe just who you are fundamentally. Mm. Like, it's so easy to define ourselves by the things that we do or people we are in relationship with. You know, I'm a librarian, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm right. a friend. But who am I? Oof. And I think this book does a good job of displaying that that's a really hard place to be when you don't have any answers.
Oh, chill.
Yeah, I don't know. I just felt like I went through a period of my life where I felt like that. And this yeah. book very much reminded me of that time. And so I still continue to I refuse to spoil the ending because I want people Thank to you. Read it still. But I think the ending was super earned, and it's just a book that has stayed with me for a while. And I think even now, when I finished reading it, I felt like my feelings were just like, I don't know. Like, I just felt like I was a pile of feelings. Yeah. Like, and just a jumble, and like, oh my gosh, who could even
say that? You were a jumble of Jill.
I was a jumble of Jill. Well, and that's where that comes from. Like, that's
You're right.
for me, because I had just spent a really long time just feeling like I defined myself in relationship to other people. Mm. And that is, for me, that's where that whole jumble of Jill thing came from. I don't know if we've ever talked about that.
No, never.
But yeah, welcome to my therapy session.
Yeah.
But no, I thought this book did a really good job of just showing that it's an experience that lots of people have. And it sucks. I think
it does suck. And especially because I think it's such an interesting thing to be talking about, because I do feel like right now, especially, there's an unintended pressure to identify singularly. And we are like multifaceted, like yes. by nature. And I think that makes people feel like failures if they don't have like a thing. Yeah. And they aren't. Like, I know people, like, even me, like, I am a reader and I'm a writer. And that's how people probably immediately identify me as in terms of like, in the easiest way. But I am so much more than that. And I have more interests than that I don't want to be pigeonholed into how other people perceive me, even if uh-huh. it's a little bit true. Like,
yes.
I love to cook. I love to run. I love movies. I love music. Like, I am more than what's obvious. And I have friends and family, truly, who had a really hard time growing up because they felt like they were nobody because they didn't have something.
Yeah.
And it's a really hard thing to convince people in this kind of like social pressure to be like, but you're you. Like,
yeah.
I can see a lot of things in you. And I had no idea that this friendship quality was in this book. And it reminds me of Queen Bee and Me.
Mm.
You know, like when you just kind of like, yeah, this person is not my friend and I need it to end.
You're absolutely right. Gosh, I still love that book.
I still love that book. I'm hung up. I have a hangover on that book still.
Oh, I love it. What's your next pick?
Oh, gosh. See, like, this is what I mean by I didn't see a through line necessarily in these, because these are all totally different, but they're all like heavy as hell. And I apologize.
This episode needs like a content spoiler, like, you know. Get your weighted blanket out.
Yes.
Be in your safe space.
We need to, like, whatever your hangover, like, however you cure your hangover, you'll need it for this episode.
Yes.
So this book was a recommendation from Josh years ago. It's called Company of Liars by Karen Maitland. And I never heard of this book. Josh and I are very different readers. he loves historical fiction, and he loves things that are like not fantasy, but just barely not fantasy.
Yeah.
This book is kind of both, like something weird and eerie and like not real is happening, but like is maybe happening or maybe is real. And it takes place in 1348 when the Black Plague is like overtaking Europe.
Yeah.
And it follows these, I want to say, 9 strangers who by chance are this company who are all trying to flee certain death because mm-hmm. the plague is just killing people left and right. And each of these people has like a really profound secret that is like detrimental and dangerous. And they slowly start to reveal themselves. And there's one character in particular that the story kind of revolves around as like possibly being like an embodiment of evil. And it's this little kid. And they blame this character on like all of these truths being revealed when really like people's natures are just like shining in this yeah. horrible moment in history. And but I say that like maybe it's it, maybe this kid is evil, like maybe he is she is the embodiment of the devil or whatever. And like that's just what I love about this book and why I have a hangover on it is a couple of things. One, it really plays with perspective and perception of people. Like one of the main characters, you think you know who they are and they seem very pure and like they're saying they are who they are, but you know like they also have a secret, like all of these people have a secret. And that it has like truly one of the most intense like stomach-hurting endings that I've ever read, that was like again like very earned, but like
yeah,
my pulse was like racing. And wow. Kind of in the same way where it's like, I'm trying to break them into the kind of different hangovers. Like, I can't decide if this is one that I felt the next morning or if this was one that like hit me right away and I never want to read again. But it surprised me because it's not a book I would have ever picked up for myself. And when I think about it, like I said, like the difference with books that are my favorite of all time and books that I've hangover, like I immediately think of the ending with this book. And that, like, I'd be very eager to recommend this to people because I want them to get to the ending so we could talk specifically about the last page. I love this book, and I've roasted Josh on this podcast before of recommending books to me that I hate, and this was a winner, and I love you, and I'm sorry.
Oh, I love that additional aspect.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Where it's like,
yeah,
there are some endings that are like, try to do the same thing, but it doesn't feel earned, like you said before. And this, it just like, you took stock of everything you just read and you decided, I decided that like, yeah, this would happen. Like this ending feels mm-hmm. appropriate because of the first 300 pages that I read. I didn't see it coming. You like, you trust the narrative and it starts like, you're like, what is this about? Because like the prologue starts with a quote from like a villager and it just says, "So that's settled then. We bury her alive in the iron brittle. That'll keep her tongue still." And you're like, oh shit. Like what's wow. And it starts with like this meeting about like burying this child alive because that she is evil.
Yeah.
And that's all I'll say because what happens next is like, well, you've given up the ending. But like,
yeah.
That is one that I can't stop thinking about.
This episode is not going well for me. I have written down the title of both the books you've talked about. Plus, as I said, when I couldn't decide which books I wanted to pick, I earlier had already started like
sure.
a list of other people's books.
I would be specifically interested in what you have to say about this one because I don't read a lot of historical fiction. I know you don't read a lot of historical fiction.
No, I don't.
And this one I was just like,
well,
I'm just...
It's interesting to me because I identify so much with the aspects of it that touched you.
Mm-hmm.
And also, that book was on like 4 of the lists I looked at before this episode started. So this one has just skyrocketed to the top of my list.
I love hearing that. And that makes so much sense to me.
Yeah.
Oh, look at Josh being
that Josh
on trend. Yeah. Do you have another one for me? You better.
I do. And this one might be super just specific to me. And I went back and forth about it. But in the event that you're like me and you say yes all the time when you should say no, And that's a weird lead-in. It's The Year of Saying Yes by Shonda
Rhimes.
I knew
you were going to say that.
I was really taken with the premise of this book because she said, you know, she would just say no, no, no to things because they would make her uncomfortable or they weren't things she had done before. And I found that fascinating because I tend to be the person who just says yes.
Right.
Without having any deep thought about it. And I often find myself in like, how did I get here kind of places? And
new people in your life are like, exhibit A, exhibit B, exhibit C.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. What I found interesting about this book is she was like, I decided I was going to say yes to every single thing. And I was like, oh God, sweet honey, I live in that place.
I've been there.
You should not.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to me because what it reflected back to me, and I think was one of the things that she learned, is that you should move past your gut reaction. Mine is always, this person needs my help, or I can do this, yeah, no problem, or something like that, you know, or like, gosh, I don't have time for this, but yeah, I can do it, so I should.
Right.
And her takeaways from this were just more of when someone asks you to do something, whether it's an opportunity for you or a favor or whatever it is, and you, your first inclination, instead of just going with that, maybe take a hot minute to think about what it is, in my case, that's attracting me to it, or in her case, repelling it.
Wow.
Because, like, I just, like, always, like, want to be helpful. And so I'm like, yes. I don't have time for, like, half the things I say yes to.
Right.
And so for me, it was just like, why am I always doing that? And, like, unpacking what that was. And I just thought it was so interesting because it was the exact opposite of what her premise was.
Right. It was, it's like exposure therapy almost.
I know. I need a year of saying no.
Yes.
Right.
Write that book. Remember we were looking for your like
we were year looking of for my thing. Like I don't know. What is the year of saying no? Like I then I sat on my couch. No, I don't know. Maybe I would find out something deep and meaningful. Wow, are you charging me for this hour?
It's my 50 minute hour, yes.
Yes.
Our producer's partner, Jamie, had a story once that reminds me of this. And I think it's also just like an example of just a little bit of like perspective as you get older. And if she doesn't want me to tell this, I'll have Maddie have her listen to it. But we talk about this all the time where like I think our instinct is just to like, yes, be helpful. And then it's sort of like afterwards that you realize like, this is going to be hard for me. And that can feel selfish, but it's not when it's about your own life. And she had a situation, I don't remember the details, but she had a situation where someone sort of last minute and under like extraordinary circumstances had asked if she could live with her for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamie kind of immediately just said yes, because she's a lovely person. And then sort of like the minute it happened, she was like, oh, actually, I didn't like remotely think about how that would impact my life and like my living life. And then the more the person talked about it, she was realizing this isn't going to work. And so I think she said to her, like, you know what? Actually, I am going to take like a day to think about it and I'll get back to you. Then the next day she told her, like, I don't mean anything by this, but like, it's just not going to work for me. That sort of thing. And I remember being like, Jamie, like, that is amazing. I'm so proud of you. Because I haven't been able to do that in my life yet.
No, it reminds me very much of the details of which we will definitely not get into on this podcast. But when Mark and I opened our home to my brother-in-law's now ex-wife. I've told you this story.
I don't know.
She was a teacher. She nannied for us for a summer, and we were under the impression that they both wanted to move, and this was like a step in making that happen. She was going to do some job hunting while she was up here, but it turned out that she no longer wanted to be married. And
you've never told me this.
Did you not work at the bookstore when it happened?
How long ago was this?
Oh my God, I don't even know.
I started working at the bookstore in the summer of 2018.
I guess it was before that.
But also, like, we didn't know each other very well for a little while.
Yeah. No, so, but it turned out that really it was a stepping stone to, like, get the heck out of Dodge without telling people that you wanted to leave.
Jeez, that's a horrible situation to put you guys in.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Great story, though.
Right? Oh, yeah. And that's a long one. We'll have to discuss that at another time.
Yeah. But I love that this one's on your list because it's just so surprising. But in thinking about it, the minute you were like leading up to it, I was like, oh, she's going to say Year of Yes. And I know because I happen to know how impactful that book was for you.
I loved that book. It's got so many post-it notes in it. I don't know I can ever lend it to anyone.
No, nor should you. You know how I feel about that.
What's your last pick?
Okay. I know I said I didn't want to talk about books I've talked about on this podcast, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention this one that has truly just like been the most important book I've ever read in my life.
Oh my gosh.
And it's Fates and Furies by Lauren Groff. I want to just sort of unpack a little bit.
Yeah.
The hangover I have years later with it. Like immediately reading it, I knew this book was going to like stay with me. Like one sentence in, I was like, okay, guacamole. Like I'm like gearing up for something that's going to be like really important to me. Her writing is beautiful and her atmosphere is incredible. And I thought I was reading one book and it's a story. It's an epic story about a marriage and it's Lado and Mathilde. And it starts with them having just eloped and then immediately goes into Lado's backstory and like where he grew up in Florida and then how he was special to his parents and he's kind of insufferable like as an adult. He's very pretentious and wants to be a writer, and then he meets Mathilde in college and then they get married and they move to New York and they have like a really artsy New York life. And this is all from Lado's perspective, and Mathilde's kind of there, is very much there and present in his life, and is detrimental to his success because then he does become like a world famous playwright. And then something happens. Again, I can't say. Wow. Anyway, this episode should be called, like, spoilers. But I won't spoil this because halfway through the book, something happens. And, well, two things happen. And one thing I actually don't think is a spoiler, so I am going to say it. I didn't know this before I read it, that this was going to happen. But the perspective then shifts to Mathilde's story. So the first half is Lado's whole life. And then the second half is Mathilde's whole life. Like, it goes beyond, like, into their 80s. And what's so interesting about it is that, like a lot of relationships, Lado places upon Mathilde a history that isn't hers. And then you get Mathilde's perspective, and you just see how wrong he was. And that, like, they are linked forever, but sometimes you're like, you two shouldn't be together. But, and at the same time, like, these are two people who could only be together. It moved me in a way that is really hard for me to say. And because what happens was such a shock that I didn't see coming and then can't imagine the book working without it. And it happens, there's still half of a book left after it happens. And you're just like, this is insane. This is wild. And like, to this day is truly the best book I think that's ever been written. Like, I just think it is so good.
What's rolling around in my brain right now, Mark and I had this conversation like 3 years ago. It just sprung right back into my mind. We were having one of those like petty squabbles and it was about running shoes. I mean, like, so sure, stupid.
Yes, that happens. It happens.
He said, I don't understand why you feel so strongly about this. And I like recounted a string of events that had happened over like 10 years, because that can happen when you're married to a person for as long as we've been together. And I was like, and I just like all of these, you know, like these four things happened. Like, why won't you buy yourself a nice pair of running shoes? And he was like, huh. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Those four things happened, but you have taken them completely differently than I did.
Wow.
Like completely. And so then it was like, he went back and like, we talked about each of the four things I had talked about, but like from his perspective. And I was like, oh.
Wow.
But it was so, so it's just fascinating, both this book and this experience for me, because it's one of those things where every time I'm like not agreeing with a person, I'm like, are they just seeing things like so completely, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So imagine that with characters who just like aren't communicating. And so you as the reader are like, wow, the whole time. And it gets, it goes dark. Like there's a lot of it that's really hard to read, but she's such a poet. Like her writing is so poetic that it's never not beautiful. And
yeah,
I love what you're saying that, because Josh and I have had similar situations too, but also just like very revealing ones. And I, there was one that I can't remember like the details around, but we were like having a disagreement. And then he said something like, oh, I can't remember this now, but he said something like, you are getting upset about something that like hasn't happened yet. And I immediately started laughing. Like it pulled me out of the moment, like in the best way.
Yeah.
And I was like, you are right. Like we've wasted 30 minutes. Like I, let's just stop. We're good. Like, you're right. You're right. And that was early in our relationship, and now he knows not to say that, because that's like my whole, yes, like I am seeing too far into the future, all the possible things that could happen.
I am cracking up because Mark and I had a conversation this morning, and I said to him about something going on in his work. I said to him, they do this screener test as part of before they interview people. One of the screeners, and it asks all these questions, like, if you approach a problem about, like, X, Y, Z, what of these five steps do you take? And I said to him this morning, I said, I have had almost 2 years now of half overhearing every conversation you have about work with your coworkers. And here is what I have decided. That screener has inadvertently identified a large number of high functioning.
Yes.
People with high functioning anxiety.
Yes.
And in normal times, that yields very detailed answers.
Right.
Making sure that you've dotted all your I's and crossed all your T's, and you're going to get things done regardless, and many, many good qualities.
Right.
In a pandemic, those of us with high functioning anxiety have a 50% brain fog and spend the rest of our time catastrophizing literally everything that happens. And so nothing can get done. And he just started laughing, and he was like, oh, I do best like under pressure. And I was like, that's your ADHD. So like you, I go, just think about like these two ways that brains process things.
Yeah.
And you're spent 18 months like smacking up against each other. Yeah. Perspective is a powerful thing.
Yes. And I, to somehow bring this back to Fates and Furies, I think that's one of its best things, is it's is the perspective.
I love that.
Anyway, those are my three. I have so many that I didn't bring, but I've I've talked about endlessly on this podcast, but what's your last one?
I don't want to spend a ton of time on it because I have very conflicted feelings of separating. It's similar to the J.K. Rowling thing, like separating the art from the artist. Mm-hmm. It's Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card, who is a garbage human being.
Yeah, like actively, like proudly actively, garbage.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I haven't read Ender's Game.
I love this book.
Yeah.
And I think it is a big part because of when I read it. Read it as an adult at the recommendation of my really good friend, Leighton Connor. Hi, Leighton. Either during or shortly after kind of the Bush years. George the second Bush.
UW.
And was immediately struck by this just because you have the power to take things too far. Is that really for the greater good? Mm. And what is the greater good? This is a
theme for you.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, like, what is the greater good?
Yeah.
And if you make a choice that you think is for the greater good and doesn't turn out the way you expect, what is your responsibility in the situation? Which is like the theme of things I obsess about in life. But this was like one of the first books that I read as an adult, but like really, I don't know, it got under my skin and really made me think about, I don't know, just like, what is our responsibility to one another? Mm-hmm. What is our responsibility when we think we're making one choice and it turns out we're doing something else? I don't know, just all of those things. And even it's a book I've reread, you know, in over the course of like the last 15 years or so, a few times. I am really struck by it every time I reread it. And I just really wish that Orson Scott Card wasn't a garbage person. I don't want to like recommend. It's like, I wish everyone would have the experience of reading it. I'd love to talk to more people about it while actively not wanting him to make any more money.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's all steal the book.
Check it out from the library. Like, no one's allowed to buy a new copy of this book as a result of this podcast.
Right.
Or you'll just add to my complicated feelings, both about it and about all of the issues it covers.
Well, but that's a great point because, like, the themes in that book should reflect the author's view of the world. Like, what is our responsibility to one another? And it's like, oh, but you think LGBTQ plus people are second.
Apparently, we have citizens. No obligation to them.
Exactly.
Yes. This book, like, it's one of those things, like, you so elegantly said it when we were talking about The Gunkle with Stephen Rowley, about how reading, when Patrick reads that letter, it, like, cracked you open.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I experienced this book.
Wow.
I've just felt like it hurt in a really beautiful way.
Mm.
And you want that to come from an inwardly beautiful person.
Yes, because it must, right?
And right. Then,
yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That is complicated. I haven't thought about the book in a long time. I have friends, too. I have friends who that is their JKR situation.
Yeah.
And not to say they love, they're like endorsing JKR, but just that like Harry Potter wasn't something for them as a kid, but Ender's Game was. And then as an adult, it's just really broken their hearts because it was life-changing for them. It is. Yeah, it was a book that I was like very desperate to read. And then I think you bring up a good point. Like we live in a time now where we really don't have any excuses. We know if someone's a terrible person.
Yeah.
Now, even as recent as the Bush years, like we didn't have access to people's information as much and who they were and authors are just authors. And I think that like, there's good and bad in that. And the good is like getting to know that you are supporting someone that you fully believe in. But the bad is that it like has a negative impact on your relationship with the work that you used to love.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's complicated. Life ups and downs, peaks and valleys. The older you get, the more you have.
Oh man. This whole episode has been like, whoo-hoo. I'm going to have a hangover from this episode.
Absolutely. I need some Advil. I need a Gatorade. I need an egg sandwich.
Uh-huh. To end us on a light note, you know, how do you get over a book hangover? I personally suck at it. I did find a Book Riot article with 7 suggestions.
Okay.
All right. So just like your gut reaction to all of these because I found this list hilarious.
Okay, let me have it.
One, reread a book you already love.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure, fine.
Yeah.
I will tell you this still does. I'm like, don't make me hate a book I love. Like, I'm in a conflicted mood. Go to sort of like the same slash opposite and like binge a movie or a TV season you loved.
Okay, so this is just like listing like what people with generalized anxiety do.
Uh-huh. When we don't want to feel our feelings. Yeah, yes. Same. Read a different genre.
I mean, I can see how that could take you out of it for sure.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Read the first chapter of a bunch of books and see what sticks.
I don't know.
I was like,
I've never done that.
I've never done that one either. I love this one. Ask for recommendations. Oh.
Guacamole. Wow.
This one I thought was interesting, and I do want to try this one. Ask someone what book they've liked recently without telling them what kind of books you usually like.
That is such a good idea.
Right? I want to try this one.
It'll get you stop. It will prevent you from reading habitually. You'll read something you've never thought about reading before.
Yeah. Because like I usually ask you know what I like. I need to like ask people who don't know me as well.
Yes, 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 yes. Good idea.
And finally, this is where I normally net out is take a break and embrace your hangover. And I really do that because none of the first six ever work.
See, so like what I've been doing is I've just been reading like the first 12 pages of Fates and Furies over and over and over again. Like I don't have the time to reread
to read
it
the
right
whole
now.
Thing.
Yeah, but I'm just like, I just want a little bit of the language. Look, so like that I'm spending time reading the first 12 pages mean I could read the next to 12 and keep going.
Yeah.
But
I don't. You're like weaning yourself off.
Yeah, I am. I'm tomorrow I'll do six, the next day I'll do three, and then I'll stop.
I love that.
That was sort of helpful. Thanks, Jill.
You're welcome. This has been like so, it feels weird because it's been heavy, but it's been fun.
This is honestly one of my favorite recordings. Who knows how it'll end up, but this is one of my favorite recordings we've ever done.
I have enjoyed this conversation. I hope it translates to other people.
Yeah. And listen, if you have a book hangover that you highly recommend or just like want to talk about and you want to tell us you can't get over it, email us at info@bookitpod.com or head over to Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok @bookitpod and chat with us there. We're online at bookitpod.com at our website. And also we have a bookshop link called bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod. I don't know last time we updated it, but we've got some good books out there. And yeah, we'll see you next time. This was really fun. Thanks, Jill.
See ya.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
Book It is available across podcast platforms.
Subscribe to never miss an episode, and don't forget to leave a review before you go.
We'd love to stay in touch. You can find us online at bookitpod.com or on Instagram and Twitter @bookitpod.
Want to read something you heard on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
Book It was created by hosts Jill Burkett-Ragacy and Michael Woodson, with sound design and production by Madeline Call at Honeysuckler.